Bob, did you know I can say Merry Christmas in 20 languages?
Wow. Can you do it right now?
Merry Christmas in 20 languages. No!
Well, that was kind of funny.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is helping!
We are the wild and pretty guys!
But they're both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Well, howdy, Mark.
My name's not Mark.
What?
April Fools.
Mark, I was going to start out and say that we have a big announcement. You're a granddad again. We got a new baby, and this is not an April Fools joke. Yes, we got baby Nora, our second pod mascot.
You know, it's unbelievable. We better keep having podcasts so we can keep having grandchildren. But yes, Nora joined us and we're so excited. She's obviously perfect and she's doing great.
Did your children say, does this podcast has like a fertility effect? Is that the deal?
There's some questions and topics I don't ask my sons or daughter-in-laws. But yes, thank you. Nora's adorable, and big brother
it's like
Jack.
Once they turn the podcast on, they lock the door and run in the bedroom.
Exactly. They'll do anything to get away from, like, no, I don't want to listen to your dad's podcast.
Well, and as you indicated, yes, we're just 5 days away from April Fools. And, you know, I thought we could start out with a history lesson and talk about April Fools because, you know, knowing coming up and I'm like, okay, hey, it's April, you know, April 1. And I always do fun. I love to do fun tricks on the kids, even as adults. I still do it. But I said, you know, given that we are an international Christmas podcast. Yeah. I'm like, you know, where did this come from? Like, I had no idea. And I'm like, is this just American? So I looked into it. I really did research. And it's amazing. This April Fool's has been around for centuries and across many different cultures.
That's crazy.
I know. So they think that it started in 1582 when France, they switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. So under the old Julian calendar, April 1 was the new year. So when they changed calendar, of course, it's kind of like when we have daylight savings and people forget to turn their clock back. These guys forgot to turn their calendars back. So people were messing up. Yeah. They were made fun of and they were called, hey, you're an April fool. But it's also tied back to some of these others, like anything, you know, when we talk about the pagan roots of Christmas. So April Fool's Day, there was a festival called Hilaria, which is Latin for joyful, and it was celebrated in ancient Rome at the end of March. And it involved people dressing up in disguises and mocking their fellow citizens. So, we could have our next life. We'll do a whole April Fool's international podcast and just talk about famous pranks from all over the world.
I think that'd be awesome.
Well, and we're talking about fun and April Fool's and all that. Tonight's movie is not April Fool's. It is a bit more serious. Should we kind of get into our movie for tonight?
We should.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
This movie, and we'll talk about the flaws of this movie, but it was very moving to me, and it was very deep, and it was very resonant. This was a really, it really captivated me in a a lot of different ways. You know, I struggle, and we'll talk about the Christmas part of this movie.
Right.
The thing is that it reminds me of that whole Die Hard debate.
Right.
Because this is a very violent movie and has Christmas as part of its theme. And the question is, of course, are you comfortable with violence and this type of activity in your Christmas movies? There's murder, you know?
Yeah, there's murder and there's shooting. I mean,
this is a Danish movie. It's like Retfærdighedens Ritter. It's called, translated, it's Riders of Justice. Riders of Justice, it's a 2020 movie.
You sort of sounded like the Swedish guy, the cook from the
Swedish chef.
From the
So the main actor in this movie, I think most of our listeners who don't watch foreign films will recognize this actor. His name is Mads Mikkelsen. He plays Marcus in the film. Now, Mads, he started out as a gymnast and a professional dancer, which makes me laugh when you see this guy, because
totally
he is like the toughest guy. I mean, barely cracks a smile, and I'm like, a dancer?
Right.
So he became famous overnight. He was in this Danish television series and like became hugely famous, went on to be one of Denmark's biggest movie actors. But then he's extended abroad. And most people in the U.S. may know him because he played Hannibal Lecter in the TV series. And I think it was called Hannibal.
It was.
Yeah, it was called Hannibal. He's also been in like Casino Royale, Fantastic Beasts, the Harry Potter, you know, the Secrets of Dumbledore movie. And I haven't seen it, but he's in that most recent Indiana Jones movie, too.
I haven't seen it either. But yeah, as soon as you see him, you know, you'll recognize him.
But the other one that we should highlight, and she is wonderful, too, really. And I can't believe this is like one of her first films that she appeared in. Her name is Andrea Heike Gadeberg, is it Matilda is her name in the movie. She plays Marcus's daughter. She's a Danish actress and a singer. She's the daughter of a musician and an actress. And her first film role wasn't this one, but it was the same year. She was in a role in 2019 where she received that year's New Talent Award. And in the same year, she's in this film.
Yeah.
So clearly, she's very talented. And for this film, she received the award for the female lead of the year. So like, as you indicated, this movie, has received a lot of raves, but let's talk about why you might say, is this truly a Christmas movie or not? What is nice is the first music you hear is The Little Drummer Boy.
Yeah.
It's an instrumental, leads into, it's kind of, you know, winter. You see, I think it's a church, and you see a man who looks very much like Santa with a young girl. And she wants a bike, and they go to a man, and he has a bike. It's red, and she's like, I'd like a blue bike. And the man says, well, maybe you'll get it for Christmas, and they walk away. Guy gets on the phone, calls someone, and a van drives up by a blue bike. Guy drops out with a saw.
Sawzall.
Yeah, I mean, professional thieves steals a bike. And what is interesting is we'll talk about this. This movie is about coincidences. It's about relationships. It's about how things go together. And in some ways, it's a very philosophical discussion through the whole film.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, you want to go, this is an action-packed, violent murder film. But there is a lot of deep thought and discussion behind it, which is great. Like I said, and that's what really caught me. So the bike's stolen. Then it goes to, we see Mads Mikkelsen, you know, Marcus, he's in service. I think he's probably in Afghanistan or Iraq, and he's overseas. His wife and daughter get in the car, try to start the car. Car doesn't start. You know, he's just been told that he has to stay 3 more months. Calls his wife, you know, already the day has started bad.
Right.
It was the girl's bike who was stolen.
His
daughter's bike who was stolen. Wife has to drive her to school. Car won't start. Husband calls her from overseas in the military and says, they want me to stay 3 more months, which obviously you can see it in the wife's face. She doesn't say anything. She's supportive. Daughter, though, is like, he's not coming home, you know, again. So then the mom's like, you know what? Let's just skip school. Let's go take the train.
Walk to the train.
Walk to the train station. Yeah. Then it jumps to this scene with these kind of odd guys, these scientists that are talking about algorithms and predictability and all the work that they put together at work. And there's a whole board listening to them, and essentially they're like saying, so you did how many hours worth of work? And essentially what they were able to prove was like people with less income buy cheaper cars than people with higher incomes buy the more expensive cars. And they're like quirky.
Oh,
they're kind of rumpled.
Yep.
They're just exactly what you might think of with these kind of scientists. They're a little offbeat. They're fired, but they're completely different. There's no relationship other than the girl and her mom are on the train, a crowded train. Yep. Leonard,
they've gone shopping or whatever for the day.
For the day, yep. And one of the research scientists gets on the same train. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's on the train.
First, yep.
He's on the train first, seated. Mom and daughter get on, and it's crowded, and he gives up his seat.
Well, even before that, but remember, though, he's sort of observing the whole train.
Oh, you're right.
He's sort of like looking. Again, think about his mind is sort of trying to correlate things. And his rich people buy expensive cars mind. And he's sort of noticing the behaviors of people. Sees a guy who looks suspicious, who gets off the train.
Takes his food and throws it away.
Yeah.
It quickly, you know, has a whole meal, quickly gets off the train, throws it away. Yeah. And then there's another guy, big guy, tattooed. Yep. And yes, that's one thing. He's very observant to details. He looks around. He notices everything. So he notices all the goings on, then notices the mom and the daughter that get on. He's being nice. He offers up the seat. The daughter doesn't want to take it. And the mom doesn't really want to take it at first. He's like, no, please. Right. I need to stand up, stretch my legs. So she sits down. And very soon after, there is a train crash. It seems like an explosion. And then now Marcus, who's been overseas, has to come home because his daughter, you know, his wife has died and his daughter's there. So father comes home, and the scientist is like, he sees on TV that the guy on the big guy with the tattoos that was on the train was going to testify, and his lawyer was on the train as well. Mm-hmm. And he was going to testify that against this biker gang. He was their key witness and in 2 days, and then he gets killed.
Yeah.
And this guy deals in probability, and he's like, the fact that this guy would be on this train, he starts, I mean, they, all his buddy, who also does the science that he does, they're unemployed now. They have all the time on their hands. So they start digging into this, and then they go find their other friend, Amenthaler.
I love him.
I love him. You just love him because he just does not like bad resolution on his computer monitors at all. He can't deal with it. And he is, and I think he's an expert in facial recognition, or I'm not sure. Yeah.
I think in many things.
Many things. They're all very smart. They can hack, they can get into things, they can discover stuff. It's very funny. In fact, whereas Marcus adds the serious drama to the film, these guys kind of add a comic element. Yes. And you're both laughing with them and you're kind of laughing at them. But it's sad too. Absolutely. They've all had, they're clearly all misfits. They all have, and the reason that they're together, and even Leonard says, they're together because they all have a difficult time world.
That's right.
And they have found each other and, you know, they can deal all with each other. They go to the police with this information that they found, because they went to the facial recognition guy and they discovered that they couldn't get a good match at 98%. They had to lower it to 95% and limit it to people in the area in Denmark around the train. And they discovered that the brother of the head of this gang, who was an engineer in train components, matched the guy who was on the train eating the food. Yeah. And they're like, the fact that all of these factors, brother, leader, same gang, key witness, it's just astronomical. This is not a coincidence.
Right.
Bring it to the police. And they're like, so what's your evidence? And he's like, well, he threw away a whole meal that cost like 14 euros. So, nobody would do that. Yes. And they're like, yeah, no, we're not going to. We don't buy into this. And I think driven by the guilt that Leonard's feeling, he wants to find the girl and the mother who died. And so they come to Marcus's house.
Yep, they start tracing. Yeah, I think he told the police officer that this being an accident was 1 in 234,287,121. He's very precise.
Yeah. Right. And that's the thing. And the other kind of interesting thing, too, is the girl who's feeling clearly the loss of her mother is horrible. She has been writing down everything that led up to her mother being killed, the bike being stolen and the
car,
she was putting on post-it notes. So in her own way, she's doing the exact same thing that what these guys are doing. So they bring all this to Marcus, and these are not the type of people that Marcus normally, I think, hangs around with, has anything to do with. And they show up at his house at night and he's like, "Who are you?" But they get his attention because they start to describe the things that they've discovered, and he recognizes, wait a minute, this can't be a coincidence either. Right. They catch his attention. Okay. Right. They all get together as a side plot. The girl wants to get counseling.
Right.
And she really wants her father to get counseling, because she's like, her father, the minute he comes home, the wife's died. She's suffering. He punches her boyfriend.
poor Sirius.
Yeah. Sirius. Punches her boyfriend. He tells her she's not running enough, obviously, because he thinks she's overweight. So things are not going well at home. These three strange men show up. They have to cover who they are, because he doesn't want to let his daughter know. So she assumes that they are the grief counselors. Right. And so they kind of start playing this role.
I think she's like, well, which one's the child or the juvenile psychologist, right? Because that's great, Dad, you're getting this work, right? And I think it's Leonard who says, well, I am, right? And so let's go and talk, right? So it was pretty good.
Well, and actually, as much as he has clearly issues and they come out slowly, but in their conversation, he does have good conversations with her. And actually, they all have, it is kind of calming or kind of helping them. They're all kind of going through a group counseling, and they're all getting better because of it. Slowly. I mean, it's not immediate, but you start to see little things.
Yeah.
And they're slowly becoming a real family.
Absolutely.
They're having dinner. They're sitting down together and all that. The only thing is that Marcus is still, he's repressed. He's still deep down. He doesn't open up. You can tell there's a lot of seething anger in him.
Leonard is trying to break through to the dad and saying, you really got to open up to your daughter. She really wants you to get help. She really needs you to express your anger. She's in love with you. Sort of trying to get and try to soften his heart a little bit. And then, like you said, the guy is so intense looking stuff and he's having nothing of it. And he's like, why would I ever trust you? And the guy's like, well, I've had over 4,000 hours of therapy. He's like, well, of course you did. You're crazy. And his response was like, says the man who killed the man or something like that. And I was like, what a great comeback.
Well, and the funny thing about Leonard is he doesn't read signals. He talks when he's got to stop talking. And so Marcus is going to beat him up, opens the door. He runs out in the field. And this is where you realize that the abuse that he has been through and the why that they are the way that they are. He kind of takes his pants on and thinks that I think Marcus is going to beat him or whatever. Clearly he's been abused in his past and he thinks that's just what's going to happen. And Marcus is like, what the heck?
Well, yeah.
And this is one of those ones where I'm sure he's like, how did I get in bed with these people? they're all nuts. But he, I think, is warming up to them as well. You know what I mean? As with all their quirks and that. So
I think he sees as these guys are going to help me get my revenge.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? We've identified who's killed my wife. They're going to help me get there. And it's Bob, that scene in the field. At first I laughed, but then as they're going back in the car, I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, that was probably a sign of the abuse that Leonard had sometime in his life.
Yeah. And that's why he's had so many years of therapy. You know, that's what, and yeah. Yeah. 'Cause same thing. my first instinct is funny. And you almost think he's doing it because he knows it'll put Marcus off.
Right.
But his response is almost so childlike and all that. You're like, he was clearly a sexual abuse victim. In the end, it's very sad. But
it is very sad.
So they go.
I think that's where he started saying, what have we unleashed here?
Yeah.
Violence isn't going to end anything.
What are we doing?
What are we doing? You're right, Bob. Yeah. I threw you off. It was, that's, then he does punch Otto in the nose.
It punches him in the nose and they drop him off out in the middle of, but what we learn from that scene, one is that, well, Marcus punches him in the nose and then later the daughter realizes it and screams at her dad. But after they drop him off, when they're driving, Leonard tells Marcus that the reason why the problem that he has is he got drunk and killed his daughter in the car. And that's why he has the arm. You know, the crippled arm, because he was in this horrible accident and that. Yeah. So she gets upset that her dad has punched out, now her friend, like these counselors. And then Otto comes into her room and tries to lie to her and said, no, I fell. And she's like, don't lie. I know it. But then he sees her list of all the things. She's struggling with, what is this all? Death. What is life about? You know what I mean? If it all can be taken away, why? Like, what is the purpose? Well, why did my mom die? And he says, you're just looking to blame someone else. And there isn't anyone else to blame, because for every person you try to blame, so many factors led up to that person. And it's an interesting discussion of what he studies, but also how futile what he studied, because he kept going back. Well, the person who stole the bike. Well, yeah, you think it's his problem, but then why is he stealing the bike? And what happened in his life to cause him to steal bikes? It goes on and on and on.
Yeah, because you can almost say, well, gosh, was it the girl who wanted a blue bike? Was she the cause of it?
Yes. Yeah. And that's it's kind of a great discussion, because she needed some kind of peace.
Right.
And this discussion, while it doesn't give her an answer, it kind of does. It gives her inner peace. Like, stop trying to find a reason or blame someone. There isn't. Because I think she was having this feeling like nothing matters anymore. And his bottom line to her was that the thing that matters now is what's left. It's your father and you and picking up the pieces and going on and that. And the riders of justice show up to attack them, because they figured out, and this is where causes and coincidences and all of this plays a whole role through this. So what they were able to discover, because Sirius, the boyfriend, posts recipes online of things he makes, and he took a picture of Matilda and Otto with his arm, and he put it on his Instagram, and the leader of the Writers of Justice daughter saw it and said, I heard you talking about a guy with a problem arm. Is this the guy? Sees it, recognizes it, looks all these people, figures out who she is. Or no, then they find they go after Sirius. Yeah.
Such a good kid.
Oh, God.
Such a heart of gold.
Oh, and just horribly they torture him. Oh, and that's terrible. And then, so they find out where they're all at, and they come and attack. Yeah. And it's brutal. There's a lot of them. They have guns. Marcus gets shot twice, I think, you see.
Yep.
But he is amazing.
Yep.
I mean, he gets guns. He fights. He gets a number of the guys killed. But what they do is the leader finds, he had Matilda hide under the bed. He went in, found her, drag her out. They have her. They have Sirius out there. And you think, you know, he's killed like 8 or 10 people, and you think, oh, he's got most of the guys. The leader's the only one left. He comes out the door. There's like, 20 people there?
Yeah. I mean, where'd they all come from?
Because I was like, oh, you know, well, it's only going to be the leader. Right. You know, he'll be able to handle this. It's like 20 people. And they're like, get down on your knees. And, you know, the way it's brutal as they all, you think he's going to kill Matilda right there, or him or whatever. And then, of all things, the misfit toys, the guns were in the house, and Marcus had told them where they were, and they come out guns a-blazing. And it is, I mean, it's a Christmas movie and you don't want to cheer for death and violence, but it was the best scene. Yeah. They are, you know, because these are the guys that you don't expect to be the heroes.
Right.
And they come through in the end. Marcus is shot twice and Matilda's shot too.
Right.
And they call the ambulance. The ambulance is coming and he carries her out and he sits under a tree and he's so worried he's going to lose her, but right. He looks like he's dying.
Right.
And he says, he apologizes to her, which he has never done. And he says, I need help. I know I need help. His breakthrough moment. I think he needed to do that. He realizes he has all this repressed rage. Then he apologizes at the end to his daughter, need to get help. So you think, you don't know, is he dying? Is he next scene? It's Christmas. Marcus is in an ugly sweater. Oh, all God. The guys are there. They're celebrating Christmas. And all the guys, even and I can't think of his name, the housekeeper.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah. And all I want to say, I mean, you have to watch the movie because I cannot do the last scene or all of the various scenes justice. But some of the little things that happen at the end of that, in that scene are just so touching. But I mean, Mark, the central question that I struggle with, is this a Christmas movie?
I mean, beginning and ending is... I'm going to go on a limb and say it was because of the way it ends and the way it begins too, right? And like you said, it's a very peaceful scene in the beginning and a bunch of things happen over the course of the Christmas season. And it ends on, I don't know if it's Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, but it ends up with a family coming together. I'm going to throw a little something at you, but you know, it reminded me of one of the first movies we ever did in Tokyo Godfather, where a bunch of people who aren't really related, who have their own challenges in life, come together to form a family to save a baby.
What's amazing about that comparison, I never would have made it. Once you said it, though, absolutely. They were all kind of misfits as well. Right. A very different, you know, because of absolutely. The violence aspect and all that, wouldn't have naturally thought of it.
Yep.
But you're right. I mean, that element is true. And this is where, so... You know, I watched it the first time, watched it the second time, and I thought, why is this a Christmas movie again? I went through it in my head, and I'm like, you know, it starts out, yeah, you could say, well, no, it's just, it's bookend by Christmas, and where's the Christmas in it? But it's the family.
Yep.
It's the healing. Oh my gosh, the healing. It is how these individuals, they all need each other, and they're actually the right people for each other
at the time.
You know what I mean? And all of them, even the side characters, the housekeeper, the boyfriend, all that, they all come together at a time that's necessary. You know, there's loss, there's death, there's violence, all the things that we see in the world, but we have to focus on the positive, and that's what comes out of this.
Yeah.
And nothing says it more than Marcus sitting there in his ugly Christmas sweater.
I love when it just flashes that scene. Yeah. You can't help but
you can't just it's good. Would you watch it again?
Yes. Yeah, I would. I mean, just like I've watched Die Hard multiple times, I think I would watch this one. Yes.
And I think I've said that about Die Hard. It's not one that's in my Christmas canon. I have to watch every year. It doesn't feel like Christmas. No. But when I put it on, it does make me feel like Christmas, but it's not something you could watch all the time, nor is this one. But the next question in terms of would you recommend it to someone, I would say I absolutely would, only because there are a lot of the films that we watch that I know, some of the people I know wouldn't be, they might be too slow moving, they're not interested, they're not funny or whatever. This one I think I could recommend to a number of people I know, and they would find it interesting.
I think they'd find it interesting because I think the overall message of when things happen in life, right, there isn't always a natural, logical set of circumstances that explains it. I mean, I have faced that in my own life, and I just think it's a great message for people to see.
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay, so now, Mark, you want to know how to say Merry Christmas in Danish?
I do.
Okay, so I wish I could say it, but I'm going to give it my best shot. It's glædelig jul. Glædelig jul. Glædelig jul. It means happy Christmas, but they kind of say to foreigners, you can say good Yule too. Good Yule.
Good Yule.
Good Yule.
Good Yule.
You know, and we've seen this word, in, especially in a lot of the Nordic countries that we, in the movies, we've seen this Yule. It comes from the Old Norse word Yule. Juleblatt was the pre-Christian pagan tradition of winter solstice. Yule is also where the English word Yule comes from.
Oh, interesting.
Yule, yes. So, good Yule.
Good Yule.
So now, in Denmark, they have a lot of fun customs. And some of them, you know, I know Howard is Swedish.
He is Swedish.
And what I found interesting is some of the things that Howard has talked about, I think we see in Denmark as well. So it's kind of, yeah, but I think it's because of the location.
Neighboring countries.
But the first thing is what they have, which is I think is kind of cool, they have TV advent calendars. And essentially what these are, they're family shows, family-friendly shows that run for 24 days. And the stories generally have Christmas themes to them. And they seem to be aimed at children. You know, you start watching it December 1 and you keep watching every night. And they say the themes are kind of the same. You know, someone's attacking Christmas, needs to be saved. And usually there's some principal kids that are in the, that'll help save Christmas or whatever. But yeah, I think it's fun. It's a great, what a great family thing. Each night you sit down and watch the next chapter. And
that would be so cool.
But the funniest thing is, they do adult ones as well. They're not as common. They're mostly the kid ones, but they do adult ones. But one of the more famous ones was they had these three men and they decided they were going to drink one beer for 24 beers, right? Yep. For each episode.
Oh.
So they did is they filmed all 24 episodes in one day. So each hour they got drunker and drunker. And that was a show.
I feel like there's a new way to do our podcast next year for the holiday season.
We'll have Jake every 10 minutes. Ding, have another one.
That is hilarious. That's creative. Yeah,
it is very. And this is, so this is the one where I, very similar to what Howard has said, the dancing around their Christmas trees, you know? So the Danes also, they say it's not so much a dance. You say it is like you're dancing around the tree, but it's pretty much holding hands and walking around in a circle and you sing carols as you walk around the tree. Now, what they do is they like to end it with a song called Nyere Dalt Egen. But the reason why it's a faster paced song, and what they do is they break away then and go through the whole house.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they go around the tree, but then they go through the whole house. And what tends to happen, they also tend to, during this time when they go, they do the procession, they will actually put the old, like the real candles on the tree. And they'll also usually put a garland of Danish flags on the tree. And because of this, the trees are typically in the center of the room, not in a corner.
Right.
So you could go all around it. But I just find it interesting. But they'll put the lighted candles just when they're all around. So in case the tree starts on fire, someone's there to put it out, I guess. Now, we can't leave any country without talking something about their food. They love to eat this risalamande. Risalamande, it's a rice pudding. And this sounds really, really good. It's rice pudding with whipped cream folded in. It has vanilla and it has chopped almonds. And then you top it with warm, thick cherry sauce. Think about that.
Wow.
But here's the deal. There's a game associated with it. So you make this big bowl of risalamande, and you put in all your almonds and all that, but there is one whole skinless almond that's in there. And the idea is you have to keep eating the dessert, eating it and eating it until somebody finds that almond. So usually they'll tease each other. Someone will pretend they find it or someone will find it and then not say anything. So everybody has to keep eating and keep eating. And then the person who has it, he gets it, you know, you will win a little prize. And I did find the one interesting thing. In the olden days, they'd give a pig. For some reason, it was a pig and marzipan, made out of marzipan. That was the gift.
Wow.
Now it'll be like they say, you know, a box of
candy or a game or something like that. Yeah. The other thing, and this is funny because we've seen this in other countries as well. One of the traditions also was to take a bowl of the dessert and to put it in the attic for the elf. There's a Nis is a small Nordic creature who resembles a human. He's only a few inches tall. He has a long white beard and a tall red pointy head. It reminds me, it sounds like a the Smurf, blue, yeah. But it looks like a person, you know, or one of those gnomes you see in the gardens. Yes. So you put the pudding out to please them or else they'll cause problems at Christmas. Yeah. Now, today, when you talk to the kids and say the Nis might cause little, you know, the lights on the tree won't light up or something. But back in the 1800s, they'd be like, look, if you don't leave something for the Nis, he's going to break the neck of your cattle or he'll burn your house down.
What?
It reminded the parents were so threatening with the Yule lads that they had to pass a law that say, don't threaten your kids. So it's a fun thing to do, and you see if the porridge is eaten in the next morning when you put it out. All right, Mark, I want to introduce you to some Danish music, Christmas music.
I'm ready.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
Least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Det er jul, det er cool. Graner lige og kasser, der er mænd, der sælger juletræer på alle åbne pladser. 12 bevægelige nisser, en sort mekanisk kat i et vindue uden med strøget trækker flere tusind watt. Kulørte gavepakker i kulørte juleposer, sælger Bilka og Irma i alle landets busser. Er der ægte julestemning og gratis brune kager, der er hyggeligt.
Mark, we love us some rap for our Christmas, don't we?
It's outstanding.
I think is this our first rap?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yep.
It's so the 1980s. Real tough time for Denmark financially, really. And there was a lot of concern, obviously, at Christmas time, giving gifts and all that. So rough time. And there's this new rap group called MC Einar. And they decided, because of how tough things were, they released this song in 1988. And they call it an anti-Christmas song. And it's called Yule Det Cool. Yule Det Cool. And it means Christmas, it's cool. And they describe it as like a satirical and sour counterpoint to the consumption of Christmas. So the reason why you might say, well, wait, it's an anti-Christmas. Why are you playing it for us?
And yeah, Bob, well, because why are you?
Because it was the most popular Christmas song from 2008 to 2022. They love, and I think it's because of the irony of it. Now, they actually paraphrase the gospel in that, and they take the gospel and they also take like a catalog of products and intermix them. And then they have some lyrics like Christmas is cool. How time flies. Nothing has changed since last year. We eat the same things. We do the same things. The same things are on TV. The same Christmas presents. The same financial problems. It's expensive and it's hard. Merry Christmas.
I mean, that is the worst Christmas song ever.
That is the Mad Mikkelsen Christmas song. That is why we have it here. Mad would love that song. True. I think that's what he's listening to when he has his ugly sweater on.
I think you're right. That's funny.
So we've enjoyed describing the movie so much. We're really running late. So I want to talk to you about, I just have one question, and this is an interesting one. And I hope you have some insight. So you notice in this movie, there was a mom, but she dies, right? Yeah. And thinking about it, we've watched so many movies where there's the mom is gone. The Tower, Rare Exports, Listy Do M, Silver Skates, all no moms. And I know Disney movies get a lot of grief about this too, that why all the dead moms? And so it seems to be a common theme. Which is surprising to me for a Christmas film. And I go, so why?
Yeah, and Sue and I've talked about this because oftentimes we'll be watching a movie and she'll like whack me and say, the mom's dead. And I'm like, I didn't do it. Like, you blame me?
Don't blame me.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to get too deep, but here's what I think is that I think that a mom surviving without a husband or the father of the children unfortunately is so commonplace that it doesn't seem like it would be that big of a thing for a mom to be able to do all the things they need to do and still, you know, it wouldn't be a story. Where unfortunately as men, I hate to say, we're often, you know, sort of looked at and like, you could never raise children on your own and deliver Christmas and do this and do that. And so part of me thinks, even though many women, Sue, will be like, that's just BS, I still come back to the, it's just a testament to the strength of women, right, well, who can do so much.
Well, and when you think of it, and I think back to the boy in Special Exports, him and his dad.
Yeah.
You clearly felt a vacuum there.
Yeah.
This movie, clearly the mother's presence is there. And so the absence is so, you feel it. It hangs in the air, you know? And it's almost like they all have to get to know each other all over again because the mom's there. So I get the emotional part of it, but I'm like, wow, it's just, it's a striking thing. But, but I think you're right. It's maybe a way to affect our emotions or manipulate our emotions, you know?
It makes it harder to believe, I think. And hey, let's just say, right, there's moms and dads who do a great job as single parents or who are on their own after a loss and some who struggle, right? So there's no way broad statement to say that people aren't hurting or need help. But I really think that when we see a man do it, it's like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. But it's interesting. Good.
Well, let's end on up note. Up not note. A dead mom note.
Nope.
You know, and I think Marcus said this in the film, April Fools. The best way to spread Christmas cheer is to be the joy and kindness you wish to see in the world. Can't you just see him saying that?
We better end the show.
Mark, as always, it's been great.
Yeah, great movie. It was a lot of fun talking about it tonight.
April Fools.
Actually, we're done.
It's over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.